We're here again with Pam Sutton and Ann Risto from the Student Support and Academic Achievement Unit of the Florida's Problem Solving and Response Intervention Project. This is session number 5 of the Focus on the One Desired Results series, which is a multi-session experience to support Florida educators in not only utilizing but sustaining a multi-tiered system of support with fidelity in every school, district, and classroom. And today we are joined with a very special guest, Dr. Monica Vero. Who joins us with a long resume of roles as an educator, administrator, district and state leader, and currently the chief of equity and diversity in one of the biggest school districts in Florida, Hillsborough County Public Schools. Thank you for joining us today, Monica.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be able to be part of this group, and I'm excited about this work. Thank you.
No problem. We're excited you're here. So before we start asking you some of the questions and talking a little bit about kind of the main topic today, we do want to give all of our listeners a reference point about the main topic of the podcast. Really, we're going to focus on two areas, which are high probability and high intensity barriers. So you might be wondering, what's the main difference? So a high probability barrier are a widespread or common barrier that is impacting many students' engagement and learning. But then a high intensity barrier are significant, something that's a significant impact on individual students' engagement and learning. And often can be combated with differentiated instruction, small group and individual instruction, and so forth. So now I'm going to transfer it over to Ann to start asking some questions and get the conversation going.
Thank you, Joe. So let's start out with those widespread or common barriers, Monica. What do you see? How do you see them impact many students' engagement in the learning areas of Florida schools?
Well, thank you for that question. And I think, you know, as in my role working statewide and then being able to now focus more deeply into one particular district, some of the major barriers have been and continue to be simply access to the same rigorous courses that all students or our highest performing students are participating in. And I know in my current role, and I'm leading the work of our 5-year strategic plan, and we're leading that through the lens of equity, diversity, and inclusion. And I'll just give one data point that's not just a Hillsborough County data point, but something that I saw when I worked statewide is Algebra 1. Algebra 1 is a required course for graduation. So when we dig deep into our data in Hillsborough, 60% of our white students are participating and passing Algebra 1 in middle school, compared to the 60% of our black and brown students who are taking Algebra 1 in high school, and in fact, perhaps not even passing until, you know, their junior or senior year, or not passing at all and not meeting graduation requirements. So these become these, you know, obviously the system has capacity for children to take and successfully participate in algebra in middle school. So we can't say that it's a issue that we just don't have capacity for algebra, but yet the barrier, which is impacting, you know, thousands of students, is that somehow they are not being identified to take algebra when they enter middle school. So these are the kinds of systemic issues that we are working to address through our strategic planning, and also working statewide to take a look at those data points, because that impacts our students, not only graduation rate, but their preparedness for more rigorous courses when they enter high school, and the gap widens. So even as we're seeing our gap closing for graduation, the next level is, what about the post-secondary options that these students are entering into? Because, you know, graduating with a high school diploma, that's a big deal, that is. But what we don't want is some students graduating totally ready for their post-secondary choice and that next step, and others thinking that they're ready, but they're not, because they haven't taken the rigorous coursework to propel them to the next level. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You made some really great connections and points in regards to the systems there. And I want to go a little bit deeper, because we know things don't work in isolation. And I love that you brought into the conversation that relationship and responsibility between K-12 and post-secondary, right? So let's talk a little bit about things not working in isolation and suggestions that you might have or that you've experienced for strengthening the systems. And that can be anything from database problem solving, multi-tiered systems of support, leadership, ISIL, you know, the sky's the limit. But let's talk systems here a little bit in relation.
So I, you know, again, just thrilled to be able to do the work that that we did in over, you know, the 8.5 years I served at the Department of Education, because working at the system level, working with school districts and superintendents, and really understanding that it's very difficult to sustain an individual change at the school level, the classroom level, if the entire district doesn't have an infrastructure to support it. Okay. And you also don't necessarily, you can't really see the big picture when you're working in that. And all divisions within the district organization need to be, you know, on the same page. And that goes from, you know, school board, our superintendent, our cabinet, to our principals, so that we can obviously then engaging our teachers and our families and everyone. And so, you know, a step towards this is, you know, the development of our strategic plan. We engaged over 100 stakeholders. We had to start this with Zoom, but we have students who are part of this equity diversity task force who are making recommendations for our 5-year strategic plan. Parents, advocacy groups, teachers, principals, board members, elected officials. We have a state representative who serves on our on our group. I think I said families, but of course families, you know, and then when you think about, like, for example, that one area, just one area, we have many, 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 but algebra. So what do we need to do to identify that? Is it a middle school problem? Absolutely not. Decisions that are made for who gets in what courses in middle schools comes from elementary. Right. Parent being empowered and engaged to know to promote and ask for these kinds of things. Schools, you know, all the different staff in the schools. It's not just the school classroom teacher. It's leadership. It's our school counselors who are often at the table in those articulation meetings from elementary to middle. You know, so some recent examples as I've been engaging with our Hispanic community and our Black community, you know, and sharing some of these statistics. I had so many parents say, I did not realize that so many other kids are taking algebra in middle school. And I literally had parents say, my child is going to sign up for algebra in middle school. And I wouldn't have known that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have pushed for that had you not shared that data. We thought that was a high school class. And so, you know, you've got to build awareness. You've got to build the system so that we're all understanding, you know, what equity means. And then, of course, what is it going to be to support? So if we have increased now enrollment in courses that we have students who historically have not been participating in, we begin to plan, what will that look like? What will the support look like? And it doesn't mean that more intensive supports are going to always be necessary. But when you are initially engaging underrepresented populations, you can expect that you've got to do something different to prepare and support the students, the families, the staff, for that successful experience.
Those are excellent examples of both common barriers and high intensity barriers. So thank you for giving us that application, because I think sometimes we get so caught up in our theories of action that we forget about all the players and the way everything interrelates in order to help our students in Florida be successful, all students in Florida be successful. I know Pam has a little bit more that she wants to ask you about some of that.
I do. Thank you so much. And I just want to also add, you know, having everybody at the table, you know, bringing everyone from the top down all the way down to the kiddos who are our stakeholders, you know, to ensure that their voice is heard, right? And that is just so refreshing, right? Go to the source, ask what they need to be able to provide that support that we need. So if we take it a little deeper and look at, you know, those barriers that impact engagement and learning, and focusing in on instruction within the classroom or even the school environment, thinking about, you know, what we refer to as ISIL, which would include instruction, curriculum, environment, and the learner, is like how does that apply when you're thinking within that school classroom? So you know, thinking about integrating strategies that support cognitive processing through academic instruction. So how do you see that as an impactor, or how can we support those barriers or address those barriers?
So that's really, really critical that we then think about what does the instruction, you know, look like? What is the student learning environment? And so, you know, one of the things that we are doing in our district is, you know, we've got some foundational work that is driving our strategic planning. And so TNTP opportunity myth, which, you know, is one, but amongst others, but just this idea that, you know, too often students who are in classes are compliant and they're doing what they're asked to do. But that compliant work is not the rigorous work that would engage them to own their learning, that would engage them in critical thinking, higher level thinking, learning to work with peers, and you know, all of these things are part of what we are expecting in a classroom environment, is that the teacher is more of the facilitator, mm-hmm. and the students are the most engaged. It's their work, they're owning the work, they're learning to become, you know, have more self-efficacy around their own work, and then, you know, providing acceleration and interventions, right? So when we think about differentiated instruction and providing those additional supports, that's not just for students that might need extra, you know, closing of some gaps or specific skills being taught. We need to plan for that, but it's also to ensure that those students who already know the information are having opportunities to accelerate and be enriched. And so I think our biggest challenge, and I know this is not just in, you know, Hillsborough, it's, you know, statewide, nationally, as in particular, when you are integrating and raising expectations for students who've often not been in these more rigorous classes or even in the general education environment, if we're thinking about students with disabilities, is the go-to is towards compliant type work. Right. And that the thought is that, you know, any kind of higher level thinking or engaging them in, you know, dialogue, you know, those kinds of things, debate, you know, those healthy kinds of things that happen in our advanced classes is just going to be too much. But what we know to be true is the research says that that's the exact opposite, that all children, students benefit from that. And we have to and will create those spaces for our students to be able to really become, you know, deep and thoughtful learners. And that's going to serve them well as they navigate through our school system and then into successful post-secondary experiences. So we really have to move away from compliant behavior, because it does not get our kids where they need to be. And again, it's not just about your grades or our school grade. These are the kinds of skills that every learner needs to become a successful adult and integrate into society in a meaningful way.
I couldn't agree more, and it's bringing to mind many experiences that I've had, you know, just supporting schools with walkthroughs and looking in the classroom, and you're right, it is that compliance and the kids are perfect. But at the same time, if you look at the engagement that's happening and what's occurring and the learning that's occurring, then you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, are you sure that we're going to be able to meet the level of those standards that you're asking those kids to be able to demonstrate? I love what you said also about preparing them for the next level, because it's what we would say is it's, you know, preparing them as an expert learner. Like, how do you know they're going to be out into the real world? How do you know they're going to succeed and be successful? Yes, absolutely. That is just so refreshing. Again, I know I said that word before, but that's exactly what we're reaching for, from the little itty bitties all the way up. You know, it's our job to prepare them. So that is absolutely, and you know, we support that through Universal Design for Learning, you know, to bring in that access and, you know, integrating and demonstrating the learning. So thank you so much for that information. So Anne, did you want to jump into the next?
Yeah, before we jump into the lightning round, I just wanted to give you an opportunity, Monica. You've given our Florida educators a lot to think about, and I know that their time is very precious. What stands out for you? What can they do, like, today? Or how can they make sure their voice is heard in a part of this systems approach to the change of getting our kids an equity and inclusive environment?
I'd say really, I'm going to continue to say raising our expectations, but really holding ourselves accountable to those raised expectations and not just being a buzzword. And I'm going to give an example. Some of the work that I'm most proud of being a part of was raising our expectations for students with disabilities statewide. And, you know, when I became bureau chief, you know, our statewide, the most likely way that a student with a disability was exiting, the most common was a special diploma. Then the second was dropout, and the third was a standard diploma. So you were more likely to have a special diploma or dropout than earn a diploma the same way all other students were learning. And the vast majority of these students are students who had mild disabilities. And so we had to really shake, in a sense, the system, say this is just not okay. Our kids can. There's, you know, over 30, 40 years of research that suggests that show that our students absolutely can participate and meet the same expectations as all other students with the right support, including support like Universal Design for Learning. And I'm going to challenge, and let me take a step back. So then I don't want to forget this point. So, yeah. You know, I think our last year, so I left the department in the end of June, and in our 18-19, I believe we were over 80-something percent graduation. Of the same standard diploma, so same diploma as all other students received for students with disabilities, and you know we were around 30-40%, not too long ago, really not too long ago, and at the same time we eliminated the special diploma, and for folks who were around during that time, there was a lot of fear. The kids are going to drop out. They're not going to be successful, and oh my gosh, what is it going to do for all the other kids? The other kids are going to drop out. School, if we include the kids, and we, you know, it was just this, you know, doomsday. But yet, we focused on what does the research say, what are those best practices, and let's continue to implement that. And our kids exceeded our expectations, as they always do. When we hold them to high expectations, hold ourselves accountable for those expectations, and then support the system as we're growing. So I would challenge folks to think about every single group, you know, think just take that algebra. Look in your school, look at your district, look in your community. To what degree are there gaps for students who take algebra in middle school versus take it in high school? And how do we address those? And how do we raise those expectations and support our students? But support the staff who teach them and support parents as well. Because if you don't do all of those things at the same time, things can get worse before they get better. And they usually do. That's part of the change process, right? When we're building a muscle, for example, there's a little bit of hurt when you build a new muscle. The muscle tears, right? But it's going to get better. You're going to get stronger. But if there's no support, then people might quit and give up and just say, we knew this wasn't going to work. So, but when you support people through the process, we know we can get to the other side. So I know that if we could do that for students with disabilities, we certainly can do that statewide for other marginalized groups of students who have, you know, huge gaps, continue to have huge performance gaps, and just say if one group can do this, you know, if one demographic group in our system, in our school system, is successful at this particular thing, every other group can too. And don't make any more excuses for that, but provide the support that's needed and just the expectation that that's what's going to happen if we put the work in that's needed.
Absolutely. That's what a wonderful wrap up with that. That's great information.
Yep. I'm fired up.
Yeah, I know.
Let's go.
My heart's beating. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We could change the world.
I really believe that.
I agree.
What I hope to see is that in Hillsborough, that we become a model for the nation in, you know, every single group by our demographics, whatever our highest performing group is right now, that we will get to the point and not take a century, but in relative time to all groups are performing at that high level and even higher. So
yeah, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your thoughtful responses.
Yes, thank
before
you.
Before we let you go though, we wanna like to invite you to our 90-second lightning round.
Oh, boy.
I know, it's so much fun. So it is great. You're going to enjoy it.
Okay.
This is going to give us a little glimpse on the other side of you. So to kind of let your hair down a little bit. So Anne's going to set the timer.
Got it.
And let us know when she's ready. And I'm just going to fire some questions. So these are just like first thing that pops into your head, just share what's just right there. Okay? All right. Ready? You ready, Anne?
I'm ready.
Okay. Let's go. So tell us something that brings you great joy.
I would say, well, I have to say, being a brand new grandmother for my first grandson is very exciting and already bringing joy that I just didn't understand other grandparents talking about. So,
yes, that's awesome.
That's going to cloud my thinking, I think, for this 90-second.
Yeah.
Through everything, my grandson.
Okay. So, all right, this may just add to it. So, what is your favorite childhood book?
Are You My Mother?
Okay. What is your favorite thing to do to relax?
Running.
Dinner last night. Did you have takeout or did you cook it? Or did your husband cook it?
My husband cooked it. You know me. That's so funny. And he left it for me prepared because he went back to Tallahassee.
Oh, so sweet. What do you love the most about your job?
Oh, just being able to help our kids, family, community, our staff address these issues that have been longstanding and help them to realize a better future and know that it can happen, encourage them. It can and will happen.
What? Who comes to mind as an inspiration to you?
Well, my greatest inspiration right now is Amanda Gorman. I mean, I just, you know, became enamored with her at the inauguration and the ability to have plain speak as it regards to our past and some of the sins of our past, but also marry that with what an amazing future we can and will have together as we work side by side.
Yeah, talk about changing the future, right?
Yeah.
One thing.
Nope,
you may
that was
not
time.
Know.
Sorry,
oh,
that was time, and that is a great one to end on too. I might add. Yeah. All right. So I want to thank you so much for not only being such a good sport with us, but like for sharing a portion of your day and joining us in that quest to support our Florida educators and not only utilizing but sustaining their multi-tiered system of supports with fidelity. Because we know then that in every district and school and classroom, we're going to see that success change for all of our students. And we couldn't be more happy than to partner with you on that work. So thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for remembering me, even though I'm in a different role, and I look forward to continued collaboration with the project and as well as with our colleagues statewide. We're all in this together, and together we can do great things.
We are. Thank you.